B-Pod Studios.
This is Felger.
Felgstradamus.
And Mass.
You're not going to get anybody half decent for free.
Presented by DraftKings on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
What caused you to go get him, Bill?
Well, just kind of what you said, Rich, is that he was available. And we wanted to, you know, add competition. We always try to add competition to our team, and we felt like we'd be able to do that. He was very open to talking about and working with our situation. We're able to work things out. And so we'll just, you know, take it day by day and see how it goes. But, you know, I'm glad we have him. And you know, I look forward to continuing to work with all of our quarterbacks. But, you know, Cam's been a lot of it's been fun to work with him. He's got, as I said, a very unique, and he's a very talented player with a unique skill set. And, you know, we'll see where it all goes. But he's got a lot to work with.
Boy, does that answer say it all or what, Miss?
Totally, right. He became available.
Again, Belichick with Rich Eisen. And then that second part of the answer was, and he was willing to work with our situation, or you know, something along those lines. He took our crappy contract offer. So it's like, you know, why is Cam Newton here? Wouldn't you feel better if the answer was, well, we feel that the league is going to smaller, speedier defenses, and you can now win, and there's an opening. And not that Bill would say this, but if he believed it, you know, with these smaller defenses, you can win with a bigger physical running game. And when it comes to big physical running games, there's no better quarterback than Cam Newton. He fits exactly what we want to do between our offensive line and our running back and our running games. And this is how we want to go into the future, because we see an opening here in the league, because defenses are getting smaller, so we're going to get bigger. And we're going to be a big physical offense, and Cam Newton's going to be a part of that. Is that why they got him? No. That's a postscript, Bedard, now that I think about this. And this is what they're going with, and it's what they've adjusted to. But Bill just told you why they signed Cam Newton. He was available. Mm-hmm. He was the last man standing, and he was willing to take their contract. That's what Bill meant when he said he was willing to work with our situation. Is that I'd like to hear exactly how he said that again. Because all that is he took our contract, and no one else would. So it's like, this is now why you're running the bully offense. Because the last guy left who would take your lousy contract plays this way. So, like I said, they'll probably land on their feet. It'll probably work. Bill will make it work. Because, you know, Lord knows, Bill has a long history of screwing up personnel decisions and coaching his way out of it. Like, that happens routinely. But, you know, I don't want to hear anything about this master plan thing. Like, this is what they decided to do to combat the league. No. This was the last guy standing who took their contract, so this is the way they're playing. And we'll see if it works. We'll see if it works. I'm dubious. I mean, hell, I still think they're winning the division, so I'm not coming off of that. But they're still going to be in 3rd and 7. He's still going to have to step back and read a defense and find out who's open and put it in the right plot, you know, right spot. You know, I don't care how well you run the ball. You still got to do that. And apparently when it's come down to that so far at training camp, Newton sucked at that.
And, you know, I'll tell you, as we talk about it, too, I do wonder. There had to be something with Stidham along the way that said, we got to go get him. Not just the contract, right? Like, and the contract's a huge part of it. But there had to be something that made him say, no, we got to take a shot here.
He's not ready.
We're not going to be good enough. We have to take a shot here. So let's wait it out. And, you know, Newton's there still. If we can get him to take the contract, let's do it. Because if Stidham had been just zipping right along, no problems, then I think they would have said, nope, we'll be fine. We can win games doing it the way we're doing it. The kid's ready to go. There was something there with Stidham, too, Mike. There had to be.
Why'd you get him? He was available. How's that? How's that for an answer? He was
ringing
available.
Ringing endorsement, right? Yeah, he was around.
No, it's exactly what you want to say to someone you end up marrying.
Yeah. Hey.
Right. Why me? Yeah, well, you were available.
Yeah, you were here.
I mean,
you showed up.
Everyone else was taken. I just said, we're just out of options. Yeah. So, you know, here we are.
Why'd you marry me? Well, my hotter ex-girlfriend who I was with for 20 years just decided to up and leave. So here you go.
Yeah, you were there.
Yeah.
You were available. You were around. You're not half bad. Yeah, it's all right.
I mean, what an answer. John in Scituate, your thoughts?
Hey, guys. So I agree. I think Bill's kind of all over the map with this succession plan to Brady here. I mean, Newton's not going to be here next year. I don't think they believe in Stidham. The thing that I kind of want to bring up is, like, I feel like on a macro level, like, I feel like he has to consider the fact that his kids might be taking over the team, and I think that's kind of potentially Bill's, like, long-term thing. So maybe I'm being too, like, in Bill we trust, but I just find I'm just kind of having a hard time thinking that he's just going to, like, have Steve Belichick take over the team and then leave him with, like, some middle-of-the-road quarterback. So I don't know if that's coming into play, but on a big level, I just think that's what could be a factor.
Sure. I mean, so there's a couple things here. I think Bill's felt this way long before. I've mentioned this many times. I think Bill was resentful of the way Parcells handled himself in a lot of spots, where Parcells just picked personnel for himself and, you know, never thought about the long term. You know, I know that's what the Crafts, that was a big beef with the Crafts, like the whole thing. Parcells never set up his franchises. He always just left and, you know, in a blaze and torched the thing, the way he spent money or the way he managed his roster. He never thought about the future. He didn't care about what what was left behind. And I think Bill always wanted to do it differently. So I think that's been in place whether his kids were here or not. Now, you're presuming that the Crafts are going to hire his kids to take over the team when he leaves. You understand, Bill does not own the team. He does not pick the next coach. Robert or Jonathan pick the next coach. And my sense, I mean, I don't know if I had to guess, there might be, I don't know, maybe they'd want to turn the page from the Belichicks. Like, you know, we own the team, not the Belichicks. This is about us, not about you. And I just wonder if that's going to come into play. So there's no way Bill can guarantee what his kids are going to be and what their future is here with the team.
No way.
He'd like them to take over and all of that, but, you know, there's a lot of moving pieces there. It's a lot easier. I mean, it's a lot more complicated than Bill just saying, yeah, you're next. Like, it's not his call.
No way. Like, no way. I think that, and I have to guess that on some level he's realistic about that. So his goal is to make his kids the best coaches they can be and put them in a spot where eventually someone else wants to hire them as a head coach. Just like, you know, basically Shanahan did.
Yeah.
Right? Like, to me, that's sort of the idea that they are going to succeed you in the same place. I mean, that one's just beyond your control. You know, for a guy who says he doesn't worry about things you can't control, I think he's just trying to make his kids into the best coaches he can make them.
Hey, Belichick should be picking the next quarterback for himself. If he wants to catch Shula and he wants to do it here, he's got 4 or 5 years to go. So, yeah.
Wow, what a line. He was there. He was available.
I mean, seriously. And Bill means that. That was a genuine comment there. Play that again, Jimmy. And then the work with the contract thing. He didn't say contract, but that's what he meant. Go ahead, Jimmy. Hit that again.
What caused you to go get him, Bill?
Well, just kind of what you said, Rich, is that he was available. And we wanted to, you know, add competition. We always try to add competition to our team, and we felt like we'd be able to do that. He was very open to talking about and working with our situation. We're able to work things out. And
okay, stop. Okay, that's it. He was available. We wanted to bring another body in, and he was open to our situation, meaning he took our lousy contract.
Right, exactly, because at the time they had no cap space, right? Which they were happy to tell people.
I think Bill's being honest there. I don't think he's being vague. I think that's exactly the rationale. Bedard has said it a million times over. He's probably right. So is Gasper, that they were just going to wait to see what was left in the market. And that's who they would end up with. And who would have thought that Andy Dalton would have a bigger market and more teams after him and a better landing spot than Newton? You know, maybe that's what Peter King was driving at very early on in the offseason, that he knew the plan too. Yeah, we'll just pick who's ever left. It'll probably be someone like Andy Dalton, some crap-ass quarterback like that. Never thinking that Cam Newton, league MVP, would still be standing. So, but as it turns out, Andy Dalton was more in demand than Cam Newton. Think of that.
It's unbelievable to me. It blows me away.
I mean, what does that say? So, you know, go figure. Andy Dalton gets snapped up. He's gone. And the last guy standing is Cam Newton. And now because the last guy standing is Cam Newton and he took your contract, now he's the guy because the guy you really wanted, Stidham, flamed out, didn't come close. And now you got to change your whole offense because the last guy standing who took your lousy contract and is taking over because your young guy you really wanted flamed out. Now you have to change your entire offense. You know, the more I talk myself into it, the more I hate it.
That's because it's hateable.
I mean, it's amazing what I've done in the last 2 hours and 17 minutes here. I've talked myself into a complete lather about the Patriots quarterback transition. I think it's a mess.
It's a gift. It's a gift to be able to do that.
Let's pick it up on the other side. Let's go nowhere with this. Let's ride it. It's Felger and Maz here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Boston's home for sports. Felger and Maz, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Mass. Way more than just a sports talk radio show.
This truly is the apocalypse.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Are you concerned? Do you think the team is concerned about Jared Stidham?
They are disappointed in the way that he has. He didn't grab hold of it even before the injury, and the injury itself is just it's a problem. It's a soft tissue thing, and you cannot do that if you're 24 years old and trying to win the starting quarterback job for the Patriots after Tom Brady.
Do you believe that there was a time this offseason that they felt he was the guy and they were disabused of that notion at some point in the offseason, and that's why Cam Newton is here?
No, I've never believed that, and you guys know I never believed that. I was told, remember, we'll go back. Early January, I asked people who would know what they thought of Stidham because I didn't know what was going to happen with Brady. And their response was, he's in a good place. He did a good job as a rookie. He's where Jimmy was after year one, which is it's too early for him, and we don't know. And I think they were there the whole offseason. I think the plan was first it was Brady. Then at some point they would grab whatever veteran didn't have a chair at the end of the day, and then there would be a competition. And I think there was a competition to start this camp. I thought Stidham was the better quarterback the first 2 days, but then he tapped out.
There was Bedard on earlier. They'd grab whatever quarterback was left standing, whatever, you know, musical chairs. Who was ever left without a chair was going to be the quarterback. Well, that plan.
Sorry,
guys. Yeah, that plan sucks. Go ahead.
Totally. No, listen, again, I just think they were kind of winging it. I mean, I think that's really what it comes down to. And Greg has said this a couple of times. Look, he said it during at the end of last season when talking about Stidham. And the more I hear it, it's starting to bug the crap out of me. This idea that Stidham is in the same spot that Garoppolo was in after year one. Okay, and again, I'm not dumping on Greg. I think he's relaying what he's hearing from inside the organization. And you know what I think that is? Bull crap. I think it's bull crap. And I'll tell you why the more I think of it. Mike, it was four games into 2014. Four games when they get their doors blown off at Kansas City, and Mortensen came out with that report that the change of quarterback could be sooner rather than later. Okay, and I remember that preseason early in the year, the whispers coming out of Foxborough that they liked Garoppolo a lot, and they were already seeing traits that Brady had in Garoppolo. I remember people say, I never remember that about Stidham. So this idea that like they were on similar paths, to me, is bullcrap. I think Garoppolo showed them more early on than Stidham did.
Oh, I knew you would resent that comparison. Jimmy, you can keep the buzzer, too, but just this is an apt time to do it.
They have the guy.
If we were in Holland, what would that segment sound like? Could you give that to me?
They had never drafted him. They never had a quarterback until the second round. They had the guy after Brady. Bill had found the guy.
I knew that would get you.
They had the guy.
Milton in Providence on Jared Stidham. Go ahead, Milton.
Hang on,
what do you got?
I can give you a longer version of that.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. I love it.
Yeah, I want the longer.
The German Maz would say what, Murray?
It's fair. Oh, right. I'm sorry to go back to it, Mike. They had the guy. They had him. They had never drafted him. They never had a quarterback until the second round. They had the guy after Brady. Bill had found the guy. I'm telling you, Mike. I hate to go back to it, but that's they had him. They had him in Garoppolo.
I said Holland, Germany. Either way, that's what European felt.
He don't go back to Jimmy G.
Milton in Providence. Go ahead, Milton.
Hey, Mike, so I agree with you. I'm not entirely happy with Cam Newton being our starting quarterback. I think that if, you know, Bill owned sports cars and he saw Cam Newton, he would say that Cam Newton was
a Ferrari, but he'd be a Ferrari with 100,000 miles on it, right? So I called because and Maz calling Jarrett Stidham now all of a sudden a career backup quarterback. We don't know what he is. And, you know, Bill's going to maybe implement Cam's play calling and sort of his style of play here. And everyone's sort of dismissing that Jarrett Stidham won't be able to run this sort of same offense when we have no idea. Yeah, maybe early on Stidham resembles more of Garoppolo and it's sort of falling off, but it's year two. It's still way too early. I'm rooting for Jarrett Stidham because it's sort of less about Jarrett Stidham and more about Bill being able to pick that next guy.
Okay, so I'm with you, Milton. You know, I'm with you. And I still want to believe in Stidham, and I'm still, you know, trusting Bill's system. I pick Bill's system over Brady, and so I'm still in too. But I also have to call it as I see it. And in year two, Bill felt Garoppolo could be the guy. And I'm sorry, Maz, to play your side of the street, but I think that, you know, the Kansas City massacre and that whole thing sort of tells you that. You know, Bill had a thing in his pants for Garoppolo early. It was, remember some of those preseason games how Bill would beam when Jimmy came off the field and how he felt about him?
Totally.
And we all know how Bill felt about Brady in year two. You know, they saw it. They saw how certainly Brady took command and, you know, got their attention and did everything right. And I think they were expecting to see something like that out of Stidham because that's what they were used to seeing. They saw it from Brady. They maybe saw a glimmer of it and a glimpse of it with Garoppolo, and they thought they'd get the same thing from Stidham, and they didn't. So I disagree with Bedard. I think, you know, they were expecting to see something from Stidham in the offseason, and they didn't get it. And so I do think something happened this offseason. Maybe it wasn't dramatic. Maybe it wasn't a specific event, but it was just a feeling that they got where they said, you know, this kid's not taking it. He's not taking it like some of these others that have come through here have taken it. And so now we have to go get the other guy, or now we have to go get somebody else. Let's see who's left and who'll take our crappy contract. And that was the plan. That was the plan at the most important position on the field to follow Tom Brady. And now because the guy that was left standing and took their crappy contract is big and runs, that's what kind of offense they're going to have now. I hate that play. If they really believed that was the future of the NFL and that's how they wanted to play offense, what would they have done?
They would have signed him day one.
No. Well, that. But even before that, what would they have done? They were on the board at the end of the first round
two years ago. They would have drafted a quarterback. They would have drafted Lamar Jackson.
When they were sitting right there. Josh McDaniels wanted Lamar Jackson. He's on the board. The Pats were on the clock. Brady had a year left or whatever. If they thought that was the way to go and that's how they wanted to play offense, they would have drafted. If he was truly a master plan and truly, you know, moving all the pieces on the chessboard, he would have been one step ahead. He would have drafted the kid there. And you would have had the genuine article. Not the guy, you know, 10 years into the league who is all beat up and, you know, you would have done it right. You would have done it and you would have signed Lamar. And I'm glad they didn't draft Lamar Jackson because I don't believe in playing offense that way. Whether it's Lamar Jackson or Cam Newton or whoever. And so, no, he does not get credit for the master plan. He said it. He said it to Rich Eisen yesterday. Why'd you sign Cam Newton? He was available. Last guy left standing. Josh and Drake, go ahead, Josh. What do you got?
Hey, Felgi, Maz, and McTakey. Felgi, I got to come at you, man. Like, you're dead wrong about you're wrong about coming on this Cam Newton train late, if you're even on it. And, like, Cam Newton's going to be the starter. He's going to be fine as long as he stays healthy. You know, you've seen the work that he's done. He's obviously the best starter out there. And, Maz, I got to come at you for saying that that Philly series wasn't a good win for the Celtics. I think that's kind of fraud.
Don't give us more than one thing. And if that's coming at me, man, woof, wow.
Oh, I know, I'm shaking.
I can feel the tire tracks there. Pats are going to be fine. He was the best quarterback out there. He was the only quarterback out there. They were all gone. They were all signed. They were all signed, all of them. Even real crap like Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota and name it. They were all gone. They were all signed. So what do you mean he was the best one? He was the only one left. He was the only one left. Last guy left standing. So that's how we're going to tailor. We're going to tailor our offense to the last guy. We're going to tailor our offense to the player no one else wanted. Great. That sounds awesome. What could go wrong there? Here's McCarthy's update. We'll come back with a Red Sox and a Bruins minute. We'll get you more Bruins coverage, too, going forward as they get ready for Game 2 versus the Lightning. Don't go anywhere, folks.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Mass, number one, because they know how to build winning relationships.
The players are arrogant dirtbags.
Dingbat.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, let me give you a couple of side items here before we go back to our Patriots conversation. One was just mentioned in the update there by Matt McCarthy, Van Fleet, and others with the Toronto Raptors talking about making some sort of stand based on another shooting in Wisconsin the other night involving an unarmed black man. I believe he was unarmed, shot in the back 8 times, getting into his car during a confrontation with police there in Wisconsin, and the Raptors are talking about sitting out the game, McCarthy.
Yeah, that's right. The Raptors had a team meeting today to discuss how they were going to react to this, and one of the options apparently that they put on the table during that team meeting was boycotting game one. And Van Fleet had this to say, "I think ultimately playing or not playing puts pressure on somebody," unquote.
Okay. Don't be surprised if the Celtics are talking about this, too. Don't be surprised if this is, I don't know, go ahead, Mass.
Well, no, I just think if you're talking about boycotting a game, you got to have both teams in, don't you? Otherwise, it becomes a forfeit. So it wouldn't shock me in the least bit. And there were some Celtics players, you know, Jason Tatum, most notable, who expressed some doubt about playing in the bubble down there in the first place because of ongoing social issues. And I would absolutely bet that there was discussion between the two teams about it.
Okay, so just keep that in mind. Game one is Thursday, right?
Yes.
Okay, just keep an eye on that. I don't know if there's a guarantee that that ball game is going to be played. Bruins are set to play tonight. What are your thoughts on tonight's game, Mess?
Okay, so I believe in the more desperate team. I think Tampa's the more desperate team. And the interesting thing to me about tonight's game is that you got to turn around and play again tomorrow. And so I'm really into, I think there's a significant chance here that the series could really swing in the next, you know, I'd call it 28 hours or something like that. Because I you know, the Halak thing to me, when I say the Halak thing, I mean his age and having to play back-to-back games is something I want to keep an eye on. And if I were the Bruins, I'd really want to win the first one. I mean, I wouldn't feel great about losing to Tampa and then having Halak come back the next night. And it's not that I don't believe in Halak. There's just an unknown there.
Well, it's not just that, Maz. I think you lose tonight, you have to play Halak in game three, right? Like, you couldn't.
Good point.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're 1-1. Now you can't. Dan Vladar is their next guy. He's never played an NHL game, regular season or postseason.
Correct.
You know, you can't throw the rookie out there with a chance to go down 2-1. If you're up 2-0, maybe you feel you've got some wriggle room. I mean, I'm playing Halak either way. Like, to me, it's not even a conversation.
Sure.
And Halak's just going to have to suck it up, and hopefully he'll get his rest some other time. And that's just the way it's going to have to be. It, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, to me, if you lose tonight, now you have to play Halak, and that's sort of a different situation. So that's why I think tonight, and even on top of that, is Ryan McDonough. You know, they're number 2-3 defense. I don't know what, you know, what you would consider him. He's their minutes leader. Ryan McDonough
Second in minutes. Yeah, but or I think behind Hedman. But either way, you know, he's right up there.
So as my understanding, McDonough even plays more than Hedman. He gets a few more minutes. Mm-hmm. But either way, he's one of the two horses. Their two horses are Hedman and McDonough. And McDonough's going to be out tonight. So now you have Tampa down one of their top two defensive defensemen, the guy who's one of their two horses who's on the ice all the time. You've got a game 24 hours later. You've got a 35-year-old goalie in Halak. Like, this becomes an opportunity. You know, you win this game, and then tomorrow, if you want to get cute, and I wouldn't, but if you feel you have to preserve Halak, it feels a lot easier to do that up 2-0. Versus 1-1, and now who knows if McDonough's coming back or not. So I think tonight's a big game.
Oh, so do I. And again, look, I mean, I introduced the Vladar thing only because I saw the comments from Cassidy where he said,
you know, they were kind of noncommittal about it. Maybe he's just dinking around. Who the hell knows? But he did say it could even be something that's determined by the series standing, right? And I'm paraphrasing there. But he implied basically what you did, which is that if they're up 2-0, they might consider putting him in there. And look, it's risky. A part of me is intrigued by it. I think it's a little nuts, too. But part of me looks at it and goes, you know what? This guy's giant. His goals against at Providence was like 1.7 something, and his save percentage was in the 930s. So I don't know. I mean, I wonder whether or not Cassidy would roll the dice. I think he's got those kinds of balls.
Boy, I hate it. I hate it, though. Kid's never played in an NHL game. You put him out there against that freight train in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I'm totally against it. Win, lose, doesn't matter tonight. Halak needs to be in there tomorrow. And may I issue a correction to you, Michael?
Please.
Ryan McDonough, second in the regular season to Victor Hedman. Playoffs, number one. Please accept my sincerest apologies.
No problem. I know he and, I mean, it's close.
Right.
But those two guys, they're on different pairs, and they're out there constantly. I mean, they play all three pairs. They've got such good, deep defense, but they deploy. McDonough was out there against a Bergeron line for a lot of the other night. In fact, Bergeron picked his pocket. You know, that's how they scored that third and final goal. That was Bergeron against McDonough. And that's another thing, you know, to look for tonight, and that is how's Tampa going to play that line? Because that line had their way. Marchand was maybe the player of the game. Pastrnak and Bergeron involved as well. And what they did in that first game was they put their Braden Point line against them. So they went number one line versus number one line. Tampa has the last change. Do they rough it up tonight? Do they go a little different approach? I think Sorelli is their checking line and a little bit of their rougher line, Goodrow and Coleman. And like they put those kind of guys out there against Pastrnak and Marchand and try and beat them up and try and get physical with them, because the Bruins did not respond well to that last year against St. Louis. And does Tampa go to school with that, or do they continue trying to go strength against strength, number one versus number one? Either way,
I'd lean on them.
Yeah, absolutely, right, Maz?
Absolutely. Lean on him. Again, look, Pastrnak, you know, and he was even doing a little of it in the last game. Not that bad. He wasn't as big a factor. But even Marchand and Bergeron, they're just not the biggest guys in the world. Lean on him.
Okay, so I think tonight's an important night for the Bruins, just given the back-to-back nature of it. Look, Game 6 and Game 7 are back-to-back as well, and Halak's going to play those. I'm not dinking around with Dan Vladar in a, 6 and 7 are going to be elimination games for somebody. So Vladar is not getting a sniff there. If you're going to rest 35-year-old Yaroslav Halak at all, it's going to be tomorrow night. And wouldn't you rather do it up 2-0 than 1-1? At 1-1, it's closer to a must-win, and then that's not why I'm playing my rookie. I'm not playing him at all. But if it's something they're considering, that's what makes tonight important. And McDonough, I think, is an important factor as well in terms of that. So we'll mix in your Bruins thoughts. We're going to talk to Bob Beers next hour as well. We'll mix in your Bruins thoughts with our Patriots conversation, and we'll get to you in our long commercial-free segment next.
Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub and streaming anywhere you go.
Jimmy, you can play
on the Sports Hub app.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
It's the show the crowd goes wild for.
Boo!
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Hey, Butchie, I know you mentioned this a little bit last night, and obviously it's 2 years later and it's a different situation, but how cognizant are you of just the series against them 2 years ago? Similar situation where your top line guys had a good game, you overall had a good game in game one, and then the series earned after first game against him.
Well, not a lot, Hags, to be honest with you. I think both teams have grown since then. Some different personnel. For me, it was more in reference that, game one is not going to dictate the whole series typically. Hey, it's great if we go out there and put together three periods like our first period, but they had pushback as the game went on. If I remember the game 2 years ago, they never got back into it. And after that, they came at us much harder. So I thought they competed hard last night, just maybe not right from the first whistle on as ready as we are. That happens to teams, but they were certainly physical and trying to play behind us and, you know, finish checks when they could all over the ice. So at the end of the day, the 2 years ago doesn't matter, only in the essence that, you know, you win the first game, you can't get too comfortable. You put it behind you, like I said, and you worry about the next one. And maybe 2 years ago, we were a little overconfident going in the second game, and I don't believe that'll be the problem this year.
Okay, Bruce Cassidy again. Similar spot 2 years ago. Bruins win game one against Tampa and got swept out of the next four. So we'll see if that's the same story this year. You figure it won't be, but you also figure Tampa's going to have a response. They're too good. They have too much to play for. That being said, it's an opportunity. Well, they're probably their second-best defenseman is out tonight, second or third-best defenseman, their big minutes eater, is out for tonight. And so let's see you take advantage. And there's a back-to-back situation. You got a 35-year-old goaltender. So is that all part of the calculus? We continue with your thoughts on this and our Patriots conversation. Luke in Bridgewater, what do you got, Luke?
Hey, guys. You know, I'm a lifelong fan of hockey. Now, I never actually played the game, but, I mean, I'm a lifelong what I consider a serious fan. And there's two things that I don't know, and I know you guys can only handle one usually at a time, but I'm going to try and I'm going to warn you. There's what it is and what does it mean, the last change in hockey. I don't understand what that means and how it strategically.
Okay, go. And what's your second question?
But then also, why can't a goalie play back-to-back? Why is it so crazy for them to play back-to-back? Is it the mental or the physical? Because half the game is played on the other side of the ice, let's say, in theory.
Okay, Luke, I'm just going to stop you. All right, last chains means that you get the opponent has to pick who's on the when there's a stoppage in play and a face-off, the road team has to throw their unit out there first, and the home team gets to then adjust to who's on the ice for the other team. So the road team always goes first. The last chains means so when after the puck is dropped, you can run whoever you want on and off the ice, but on a dead whistle on a stoppage of play, the road team has to put their lineup out there first. And right. So what you get to do is you get to dictate the matchup. If the road team throws out their fourth line and you want to take advantage of it, you can then throw out your first line against their fourth line and get a good matchup. And then they have to run that fourth line off right after they drop the puck. That's what that means. The back-to-back thing, I agree, should it be that big of a deal? Except if you're 35, Maz, and you've played now, whatever it is, 7 games in 5 months. And the thing that I worry about most about Halak is him pulling something, right? Like, you know, you've ramped up so quickly, and overnight here you've gone from not expecting to play at all to now playing every night and every game, and now, you know, back-to-backs included, that's when you tweak something, and now he's out, and now your goaltender rotation is Dan Vladar and freaking Max Legacy.
Right.
And then you're porked.
Bingo.
So I worry about a little nagging injury. That's my biggest concern.
Well, so, and honestly, I'm not worried about the back-to-back as much as I am two of them. So you mentioned this in the last segment, and this is really the bigger thing, is that, you know, you get to game two now, and all of a sudden you get back-to-back 2 and 3, back-to-back 6 and 7. Well, for a guy like Halak, that's a lot of hockey in a short period of time, and I think there's a good chance this is going to be a long series. So if you get up 2-0, can you mitigate that? And you say, you know what? We only have to play one back-to-back instead of two with Halak. We can bite the bullet. And honestly, I don't know that I would do it either. I just keep playing Halak. And, you know, you got to really rely on your trainers and everything else. But with the way Cassidy said it, I started to wonder whether they have concerns about having to just, you know, keep putting Halak out there over and over and over again with no time off and potentially running him into the ground.
If they are truly concerned about the back-to-back, it's a fascinating spot for Bruce Cassidy to be in, because particularly if they win tonight, and let's say they go Halak, isn't that the we're going for it mentality? We're going to try and win this series earlier on than play for the long haul. You normally think about that like in baseball sense, right? Like, all right, we're going to throw our best pitcher in game four instead of game five. You don't think about that in the hockey sense. They may have a situation like that here.
We've got Jimmy and Medway on the hockey. What do you got, Jimmy? You're up next.
Yeah, I won't even touch on the Milbury comment, because I'd like to assume normal people who aren't pandering for likes on Twitter realize there's absolutely nothing wrong with what he said. But you talked about this yesterday, Felger, and I've been saying it for years. The NBC broadcast is hot freaking garbage. last night with Dallas and Colorado, they made one of the most exciting games of the playoffs so far. I feel like I was listening to McCarthy at midnight, for Christ's sake.
Thank you.
Even Boucher, you know, he's a local guy, and I'm rooting for him, but he's an absolute robot in his little glass down there. At least Milbury has some opinions. He's not afraid to speak his mind once in a while. And Felger, it's gotten so bad, they've got me begging for more Pierre and his ridiculous player bio.
Seriously.
Dead fish like the rest of these guys. Bring back Milbury and add some freaking entertainment to the broadcast, please.
At least he's a personality. Oh, my God, the NBC hockey product is so freaking dull. And I say it all the time. Compare it to the NBA coverage. And not just TNT, which is like the gold standard between Barkley and Kenny Smith and Shaq. Like, it's just, but the NBA lets those guys be themselves. And they let them criticize people. They let them rip people. They let them take chances with their opinions. And they don't hold it against them. And they don't try and cancel a guy for saying something that pisses one person off on Twitter. I mean, my God, but it's not just the TNT thing. Look at the ESPN coverage. Like, Van Gundy and Mark Jackson have personality. They add a little sauce. They criticize people. They get on people. Never mind the studio shows between Perk and Paul Pierce. Like, they all do it. The NBA lets their guys whip it out there and, you know, have opinions and have personality and criticize people. That coverage is so much more entertaining than what they do on NBC. I mean, I think the executives at NBC are scared crapless of Bettman or something because they don't let anyone say anything. It's all just this dull, bland, no personality, no criticism, no edge. I mean, between Patrick Sharp and Boucher, and these guys are wonderful to look at. Again, beautiful men. They really are. I could gaze into Patrick Sharp's eyes all night long. What does he, has he ever said a freaking thing? And this is hockey. It's a smaller audience. Like, take some chances. Have some fun. Oh, it's just brutal. It's just brutal.
No, the NBA really does. It takes the trash talk into the booth.
It does. It's
really
fun.
What it is. It's trash talking in the booth. It's awesome.
The broadcasts are fun. The broadcasters get after it. They let it out. The league doesn't come back after them and get on them. And the executives there let the guys do what they want to do. NBC? Oh, my God. It's to me, it's just compare the two. It's so striking. And, not, you know, Milbury's one of the few guys who might say something every once in a while. Nope, no Moss. He's been canceled. So, I mean, what am I left with? The caller's right. Bring back Pierre.
Little Atkinson is so smart out of Riverside, Connecticut, Boston College, Avon Old Farms, and Mid-Fairfield Blues before he got to the NHL.
I mean, NBC's idea of entertainment is Pierre. Tell me where the guy played Bantam. Like, but, I mean, compared to Boucher and Sharp, like, that feels to me like entertainment now. Good God. I don't mean to, you know, like, get too heavy on that, but it's, can you have some fun? You know, lighten up a little bit. Lord. Here comes McTakey's update. 90 seconds, no commercials. Will reset our lead Patriots thought as well, which is, you know, I could say in a nutshell, I think the Patriots plan at quarterback sucks, and I'll tell you why right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.